So the next topic I actually wanted to bring up, because it's really important, is Stipe versus Francis that's coming this Saturday. Mm. Did you watch Countdown, by the way?
I did.
That shit's crispy.
It is good. I thought it was funny how they did that. We'll talk about it later, about the Volkanovski thing.
But oh, yeah.
They posted it, and then within 5 hours, the fight was cancelled.
Because all that effort that goes into those, like, I reckon a lot of effort goes into those. I reckon
they're very high quality.
Very high quality content. It's actually one of my favorite pieces of content that comes out.
I love watching the UFC countdowns, especially. I mean, the last one was pretty good as well.
Yeah.
But
Stipe versus Francis. You know, one thing about Stipe is, in almost every championship fight that he's been in,
underdog.
He's underdog.
And he keeps winning. Fuck.
He was the underdog against Francis in the first fight. Now he's the underdog again in the second fight.
I know.
Like the disrespect.
Do you know what I find funny is that, like, with Francis, everyone keeps on saying, you know, after Francis lost and then he lost to Derek Lewis, he really changed, you know. And I understand, like, He's learned some new skills, right? But they're making it out like he's a whole brand new fighter. He's evolved in the evolution of Francis Ngannou. I get it, right? Hasn't really shown it. In his last few fights, he's mainly just been knocking them the fuck out.
Yeah.
Really quickly. Hasn't really showed that he's got the same gas tank.
Yeah.
That he needs to fight Stipe, because in that last fight, he was exhausted.
Yeah, he's just going to be like, okay, I had this conversation with someone in the gym, and they were saying, oh, yeah, Francis is going to knock the fuck out of Stipe. See a highlight, real knockout. I said, other than his power, what do you think he has? And he just goes, he's got good feet work, and I'm like, footwork. And I was like,
No, it doesn't. It's not normal for a heavyweight to have really good footwork for majority of the fight anyway, because they gas. It's a huge to move around a 265 who cuts down to 265. For you to have really good footwork, you might have it in the first round.
Yeah, but not even that. But like, if Francis hasn't worked on his wrestling, Stipe is just going to go, all right, mate, let's go to the ground and just take him down with that higher level pedigree.
Yeah.
Because people forget how fucking much strong Stipe's got power too, man.
Everyone. He is, and I think everyone underestimates how strong he is. His strength and conditioning is underrated, and he has power.
We talked about that in like the early days of this podcast.
Yeah, just why Stipe is so strong and all the different exercises. And every time I see him in the countdown, he's always using the reverse hyper.
Yeah,
it's really interesting, and he's a powerful dude. And the last time he fought Daniel Cormier, that was probably his lightest we've ever seen him. Cut down, trimmer frame, a little bit leaner, but he just kept up. His output was so good against Daniel Cormier. Now, he didn't knock him out for the second time, but that output was so good. The good thing with Francis is once he started to notice that he needed to move his camp, because before he fought Stipe, he was in Paris, right? He had a quick turnaround a few weeks later, then went to Paris, trained there, then fought Stipe Miocic. However, you know, he's now moved to Extreme Couture, which is a lot different now, and a lot of people are saying he's getting obsessed with grappling and wrestling.
Good for
Understand
him.
That. Good for him. Good for he's him. Athletically gifted for sure.
Yes.
But he's found it a little bit late.
Yes.
Right? For him. He's found a little bit late. It would be really good. Like, if Francis Ngannou improves his grappling ability a lot higher, brilliant, right? But to use that as an argument against the champion, who is also a really good wrestler, it doesn't make sense, right? It would work really well against maybe a top 10, top 5 fighter. But when it's the champion and someone as high caliber as Stipe, I don't see Ngannou taking Stipe down. Now, if he does, I see Stipe getting back up. However, don't see the likelihood of it happening, right? Ngannou's probably takedown defense has probably got a lot better. When I was watching his strength and conditioning on his YouTube channel, it's interesting. You know, he's holding the bag and he's doing a lot of moving up and down against the cage. He's almost just doing like squats up against the cage. But he's getting comfortable with being in these positions where he's got to use the cage to employ that with his takedown defense to avoid the takedown. I think it's really good. I think he's really strong. Maybe Stipe won't get the takedown in the first round. Mm-hmm. second, third, I think it'll happen.
We'll try. I reckon Stipe's game plan going into the fight might be just use your distance, wear him out, a bit like last time, don't get respect his power, but at the same time, pop off that quick jab that he's got, go for those body shots. His jab's gotten better. It's just pop off those body shots that he did against Cormier, and then if he has to, go for the takedown, and then make sure you control him on the ground. And then wear him out, because Francis was both of them were absolutely exhausted after that last fight.
Mm.
I've seen footage of both of them just like completely like worn out, lying on the ground.
I would say that Ngannou was more tired. He was so exhausted in like even the second and third round. End of second and third round, he got up and he was staggering. He was so tired. Whereas he's carrying the weight, right? But Stipe is the one doing all the work to take down this 265-pound plus.
Yeah,
Francis Ngannou. Solid as a rock. Stipe's expending a lot of energy, right? Especially taking down someone at the heavyweight level like Francis every round. It's going to use a lot of energy, and anyone's going to get a little bit tired. But I take Stipe in this fight 100%. I think, you know, I think it's good that he's the underdog.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he loves to prove people wrong, you know?
That's the best thing about a fighter and a champion that has a chip on his shoulder, right? That's the best thing.
Don't trust the odds. That's all we say. Like, I mean, especially when your name's Stipe Miocic. But it's not even that. But it's just a disrespect they give him. He's the greatest. We can argue he's the greatest heavyweight of all time.
I wouldn't even argue. They always bring Fedor and things like that. Fedor's, you know, he's fought in organizations where they've had issues with fixing fights. And I know, right, that's not Fedor's fault. But, you know, Fedor's also didn't, even when he was at Bellator, didn't have to do any drug testing and things like that, right? That's huge, right? That's massive. Now, Stipe never failed a drug test. And the amount of people he's crossed off his name. Now, ugly, he's lost to Stephen Struve. Stephen Struve's not the best heavyweight. However, after he lost to Stephen Struve, boom.
Boom. Steamroll. He just ran a train for heavyweight.
And these heavyweight champions seem to get better and better and have better careers when they're older with more experience. Yeah. And usually the heavyweights, they can hang around a lot longer than maybe a lightweight, a bantamweight, or a flyweight, because power is the last thing to leave and speed is not the most important thing. Now, and obviously Stipe can wrestle really, really well. Stipe's grappling ability is such a high level, and I think it will be just another tool in Stipe's toolbox that is just going to be better than Ngannou's. I think Ngannou's, he's just got to be smart. Ngannou's can turn anyone's lights out at any time. And I think if Stipe stays respectful like he was in the first round, the first fight, then he will beat Ngannou handily once again.
Yeah, because if Francis he rocked Stipe a couple of times in the first fight. So if Francis works on better how to get slipping and out of Stipe's guard, We'll definitely see. It's definitely going to be a fight for sure. But the card itself now has lost a little bit of its star power because Volkanovski and Ortega has been pulled out. Now, here's where this is really weird. We were just talking about just before we continue this episode. Volkanovski,
he's quite upset about it.
Yeah,
too,
right? he tested negative before he left. Tested negative the day he left. Gets to America?
Yeah, so he posted negative when he was at in Australia. Then he posted it was negative when they arrived. And I think they were then, because they were negative, because we could see on their stories, they were at the UFC PI with Colby and all that and other MMA fighters we know. And then following his negative test after, you know, touching down in America, then he's then had another positive test. Now, we don't know if it's a false positive or anything like that, but it's kind of ruined their camp, right? Because Brad Riddell also, he was supposed to fight yesterday on the Brunson versus Holland card, but they got pulled from that fight, and he was supposed to fight Greg Gillespie, which sucks because that would have been a brilliant fight, right?
Not even that, but Matt was pissed because the tabloid media immediately jumped onto Brad and said, oh, Brad got COVID. He didn't have COVID. It was Greg's side that broke the COVID protocols, I believe.
No, I thought Volkanovski got COVID.
Oh, wait, no, because then Brad couldn't fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's right,
So Brad Riddell, he got pulled from the card just because he's fighting with the other Australian guys, right? And it's unfortunate that he got pulled. But that fight is obviously going to be postponed. But so is that fight with Ortega versus Volkanovski, which was what was making UFC 260 so stacked.
Yeah.
We got two championship level fights that we're going to blow our socks off. Now, it's unfortunate now it's been knocked down to Miocic versus Ngannou. Still a brilliant fight, but it's really unfortunate. You know, Volkanovski's tested positive, most likely a false positive.
Yeah.
Or maybe just positive asymptomatic. We don't know. It's really, really unfortunate because everyone involved now has to fly back to Australia, be then in quarantine for two weeks, and then start training again, right? Just for the UFC, just to say, all right, you've done your quarantine, let's fight in the next 2 to 4 weeks time against Ortega again. It's horrible for Ortega as well,
yeah.
But it's brutal for maybe Volkanovski's team a little bit more because Brad Riddell was on a separate card and yet still got pulled.
Yeah, right?
It is unfortunate. Really, really sucks. But
missed out on that title opportunity for Ortega as well, and he's got pushed back a little bit.
It's been pushed back a little bit. It's
we don't have a confirmed date to when it's going to be pushed back to, unless it's going to be cleared.
I believe they'll have to start being negative tests for them to start even entertaining the possibility. But at this point in time, Volkanovski tested positive for COVID. It's made it an issue for Ortega to fight, as well as Volkanovski's team members to fight as well in their own significant fight cards. But it's so unfortunate, right? They've now got to go back to a completely different country, our country, Australia, and now they've got to be in 2 weeks. 2 weeks quarantine, and then they've got to wait on the possibility of then flying back to America and doing the exact same shit again. Mm-hmm. It's so frustrating, but the reason why UFC has been doing so well is because they've been leading with strict COVID protocols, which has made everyone safe and made it work during times when a lot of sports couldn't have their own competitions on. So they're doing the right thing. It just sucks. It just sucks. And it's just the brutal kind of... Once this vaccine probably gets cleared and, you know, the fighters have the ability, if they want to be vaccinated, then I believe that will make a lot of these scenarios not really happen as frequently. But it just sucks. It just sucks. Although the Volkanovski-Ortega fight has been pulled, we know that Stipe Miocic and Ngannou has been affected, that they haven't been interacted with them. And we know that Tyron Woodley is going to have his fight against Vicente Luque.
Now,
interesting fight.
Now, we talked about this before the episode of the podcast, but we know that the UFC is going for a whole range of cuts right now. You know, Andre Arlovsky's gone, Junior Dos Santos is gone, Alistair Overeem. No, Andre Arlovski is not gone, sorry. Junior Dos Santos is gone and Alistair Overeem's gone, which was a bit weird because the UFC didn't even pay tribute to those guys. I felt that was a bit strange. It just got cut. It wasn't properly announced as well.
No, but maybe later down the line they'll do UFC Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Which they're both Hall of Famers, regardless.
Oh, for sure. But everyone has been sort of depicting for weeks that Tyron Woodley could be next potentially for these cuts if he loses to Vicente Luque. Well, because one, Dana White and Tyron Woodley have never been in each other's good books.
No, he said he's one of the most frustrating fighters to deal with.
And the last thing you want to do is piss off Dana, because Dana has so much power. You know, obviously he's the president. And then I even remember Dana saying openly in a interview, completely unfazed. He says every time Tyron Woodley opens his mouth, he shoots himself in the foot.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other thing I found out today is that ever since Tyron Woodley has dropped his rap video, he hasn't won a fight. He hasn't won a fight in quite a few years.
I think following the Darren Till fight,
that was the last one he won.
That was the last time he won. And then he did the rapping thing. It was like when he dropped his song, Falling Out of Love With You, or whatever it was. He's now currently on a three-fight losing skid, and it's unfortunate, but warranted, because I think he's been a bit spread a bit too thin. He's tried to juggle a few things, rapping. He's also done the commentating as well, the commentary desk as well. He's done quite a few things.
He's a good commentator, though.
He's a good commentator. I do like listening to him. But it's also warranted with that three-fight losing skid because they've given him the toughest matchups you can. Yeah. He's fought Kamaru, fought Gilbert, and he fought Colby, right? I hope that rib is now healed up following the Colby Covington. It's been about a bit of time. It's been September last year. So there's been tons of time for him to recover. I just hope that rib is not susceptible to damage again. We don't know how bad the break was. I think it was actually not so much the break with the rib. It was actually some of the... I don't know if it was an intercostal muscle or something like that, but it was something similar, like one of the ligaments was damaged.
There was pretty extensive damage to his rib. But even that, but when you said, oh yeah, they give him killers. Well, Vicente Luque, he's a killer as well.
Vicente Luque.
He's on a 4-fight winning streak, 3 of them by knockout.
Two-fight win streak. He lost to Stephen Thompson.
Well, every time I look at the ranking thing, it's always like his latest one at the top. I thought it was the bottom. Yeah, you know what I mean? So that's why. But okay, so in the last 2 years, he's had 5 fights, and he's lost 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
The only people he's lost to in the UFC have been Leon Edwards, who's arguably a title contender at welterweight, and Stephen Thompson, who has already been a title contender twice.
Yeah.
So, he's only 29. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Tyron Woodley is a good bit older. Actually, I don't know his age, to be honest. Let's have a quick look.
He's got a...
He's 38.
Yeah. He's got a knockout, highlight reel as well, Vicente Luque. And not even that, but he was... I think he almost got knockout of the year one year when it was a knee.
Mm.
A knee. I can't remember who it was too, though. Anyway. But... the thing is, this is an easy way out for Tyron. Tyron could be battling for his job because he's like 3 losses, and we talked about in a previous podcast.
I think it was Brian Barberina.
Yeah.
Back in 2019.
Yeah. Because then you like look at his resume and you say, oh, if they lose 3 fights in a row, you got a question mark next to your name.
Mm.
And then if you lose again, you know, that could be potentially your last fight, really, and then they might cut you from the UFC. And plus, again, Tyrone's 38. That's near retirement age. But we've seen older fighters, of course, yeah.
That's typically in light heavyweight and heavyweight division. Yeah. Even Glover Teixeira, light heavyweight fighter, believe he's around 40, 41. Yeah,
he's 40.
Now, that's tougher when you're in welterweight division because you're fighting younger and younger people that are faster and quicker, right? Power is the last thing to leave. We know Tyron Woodley's got a lot of power. We know his wrestling ability is really, really, really good, right? He's often overwhelmed people by grappling them, taking them down to the ground,
mm-hmm.
and employing brutal, brutal elbows and ground and pound. I honestly think he has really good ground and pound, right? And there was a time when he was going to be considered one of the best welterweights ever, underneath GSP, of course, right? And maybe Matt Hughes and et cetera. But he's now on a 3-fight losing skid against some of the very best. They're all being top 5. Now he's fighting Vicente Luque. I believe Vicente Luque is now number 9 in the ranking, something like that. So he's been giving a lower ranked opponent, however, very underrated. He's only lost to 2 people in the UFC, Leon Edwards, right? And who's the other person I'm forgetting? So he's lost to someone else. Stephen Thompson. And both of those were just by decision. So he's never been knocked out or submitted by anyone in the UFC, right? He's only 29, got a huge amount of growth that he can continue to, you know, to succeed with. And Tyron Woodley, he's 38. There's a 9-year difference. That's a huge discrepancy in age. Tyron Woodley has been a lot of fights. He's still got an incredible amount of power. He's still very explosive. But not as explosive as he was when he used to be the champion, right? When he fought Robbie Lawler, that was probably one of the best highlights for him. It showed how quick he was and how fast he can explode right off the feet. Now, we don't really get to see that much. He seems very timid in his fights. He seems very gun-shy, right? Yeah. He's, you know, I think Dana White continues to call him the most gun-shy welterweight champion there ever was. Now, I can agree with them. You know, Tyron Woodley, great fighter, big personality, but he seems very withdrawn when he's fighting. He doesn't like to hit the switch.
Yeah.
And I think it's dangerous to hit this, to then be aggressive and hit the switch against Vicente Luque, because you could arguably be hit by one of those flying knees, yes, or knocked out again. Yeah. So it's an issue. It totally is an issue. And I would honestly, I think Tyron Woodley is kind of spent. I think he's hit his goal. I think he defended his title numerous times, and now he's kind of at the later stages of his career, right? I think he's having successes in rapping and other things, and being a commentator, that I think he will lose this fight. I think Vicente Luque is arguably very underrated, very explosive, and I think Tyron Woodley's power is still there, but his speed has waned as well. He's very gun-shy. And if he chooses then to be overzealous and over-aggressive, then he's going to be counted and knocked out.
So how you look at it is two things. One, Tyron's age, obviously, because he's much, much older against a younger fighter. And two, he's just got so much going on outside of the UFC. You know, he has so much business.
It's diminished his personality in the cage, right? He's been very timid. You know, we know he's got the power, but he never seems to, if he misses a shot, they're in maybe one or two punch combos. He never seems to, when he was a lot more explosive, right? He used to just rush people, just rush them. And it worked. It worked really, really well, because he would put through these multiple punch combinations and just, he was so fast off the back foot. Boom. Just like a train through you, right? Incredibly explosive. And I think he is well-rounded as well. He's got his black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's got incredibly incredible grappling ability. He can knock you out, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's powerful. He's huge. He's got a size difference at welterweight. Obviously cuts a bit of weight, but he's got a massive size difference. I think he's just different.
Yeah.
He's not the same fighter mentally. I think perhaps he's hit his goal, been the champion, defended it, and think maybe he wants to move on to the next thing, which is why he was moving on to the rap career. Yeah. And I think he's just a bit gun-shy. And if he chooses then to switch and to be this overzealous, over-aggressive fighter, he can then get KO'd. The only way I can see Tyron winning is by grappling Vicente Luque the entirety of the fight. I think that's the only way Tyron wins. And I think it still sets up Vicente Luque's counters very well. I think Luque will beat Tyron.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I agree. Vicente probably will beat Tyron, but I reckon it will probably be by decision.
You think so?
I think it will be by decision or potentially a TKO.
I think maybe by decision. If it's a three round, I think by decision. I think very explosive, but I think Luque will just beat Woodley to the punch.
Yes.
And hopefully be able to stuff any takedowns. If that is his thought process anyway. Another good fight on the UFC 260 card is Sean O'Malley. Now
O'Malley.
He's coming off he's coming after a loss to Marlon Chito Vera.
Yeah.
That was after, you know, kind of like the rise of the calf kicks becoming more and more prevalent, and obviously Sean O'Malley's had a lot of issues. He always wears ankle wraps, but he kicks a lot. But he has issues with his foot. He has issues with.
Ooh, he's broken it twice now.
Yeah, but he's also had issues with drop foot and things like that. And the calf kicks did not help. Drop foot rolled his ankle, went down, and I believe the fight got called off a little bit too early. However,
He was on the ground. I mean,
he was on the ground. However, he was taking a few shots, but it was simply called off because of the injury to his foot, not so much the damage that Vera had put forward. Now, he's fighting Thomas Almeida, very good kickboxer. However, in the UFC, hasn't gone his way. 3-fight losing skid. I understand Almeida is a very good kickboxer, and I think this is a very fan-friendly matchup. Sean O'Malley, very good kickboxer. I believe he's a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Thomas Almeida, very good kickboxer as well. It sets up stylistically for a very fan-friendly matchup and most likely a KO, right? Because they're both very explosive bantamweights. I think this is the UFC trying to slowly build Sean O'Malley up a little bit slower, because they gave him Chito Vera. Chito Vera is currently number 15 in the rankings, but perhaps too big a jump for him. Too big a jump. He needed to have a little bit. The only issue with Sean O'Malley was he was having injuries and he had to have a bit of time off the UFC, and then he rushed it afterwards, thinking he had to make up for that lost time, whereas he should have just taken his time slowly moving up. I think he's a very good kickboxer. I think he's grappling ability. We haven't seen that much ability from him, but we know he's very, he's got proficiency on the ground in terms of jiu-jitsu, being a purple belt of Brazilian jiu-jitsu as well. And it's interesting to see that he's been given Thomas Almeida. Now, unfortunately, if Thomas Almeida does lose this, most likely, just like Tyron Woodley, three-fight losing skid, if he does lose this fight, he will most likely get knocked out of the UFC, since he's not a ranked fighter either.
Thomas Almeida hasn't won since November 20th, 2016 against Albert Morales.
That is a long period.
That is a long time. He's lost to Jimmy Rivera, Rob Font, and Jonathan Martinez, and also he's lost.
Now, Rob Font, that's a good person to lose to.
And also Cody Garbrandt.
Rob Font and lost to. Did he lose to Cody Garbrandt as well?
He lost to Cody Garbrandt, but that was in May of 2016. May of 2016.
Yeah, so those, like, you got Rob Font. Did you fight Rob Font twice?
He fought Rob Font once.
He's fought Rob Font and he lost to Cody Garbrandt as well. Now, interesting that Rob Font and Cody Garbrandt are actually suited to fight each other. We'll talk about that on a different podcast. Yeah. But that's interesting as well, that because Rob Font is number two in the Bantam rankings, Cody Garbrandt being ex-Bantamweight champion. Those are not bad people to lose to, right? But he hasn't won since 2016, which makes you... I can understand that there's a lot riding on this fight. And the pressure of losing this fight is quite a lot. If he loses this fight...
Yeah.
There, and if he loses this fight, he's out of the UFC, right? If you haven't won in 5 years, that's got to take a toll on your mentality.
Yeah.
I know he's a very good kickboxer, but that's got to affect your strategy in this fight. It's an interesting matchup for sure, because I wouldn't have thought Sean O'Malley would be given this type of opponent. I think he would still have been given someone on a one fight win streak or something like that. Helps him build up. For him to fight Thomas Almeida, who's on a three-fight losing skid, it's almost like they're suited this matchup so that Sean O'Malley can rise up and build himself back up. Mm. It's an interesting matchup for sure. What do you think?
Well, I want Sean O'Malley to sort of rise back up, but at the game, same time, you're getting someone who's probably pretty much might be fighting for his job. And, you know, we had this thing where everyone was talking about Sean O'Malley because he was... proclaimed the darling of Dana White's Contender Series. Great knockouts. The fans loved him because of his personality. You know, Joe Rogan loved him. He loved Joe Rogan. And, you know, he's had some kick-ass knockouts. Shame that Eddie Wineland knockout definitely put him on the map. But when he lost to Marlon Vera, people were just counting him out. People kind of just forgot about him afterwards.
He did meme himself a little bit by saying he's undefeated.
That's right, yeah. So he mentally he believes he's undefeated and all that. So
I get what he means. He wasn't beaten by damage. He wasn't KO'd. He wasn't submitted out of skill ability. Yeah. He was simply, well, technically was beaten by skill ability, but he was calf kicked really well. Yeah. On his peroneal nerve, caused him to have drop foot. He already has numerous issues with his ankles, right? He's fallen down. He's been injured during the fight and he's lost, right? Yeah. But that injury was not caused by Sean O'Malley. It was caused by Marlon Chito Vera's brilliant calf kicks.
Yeah.
Chito played the game. He did really well. He did win against Sean O'Malley, but I understand that Sean O'Malley says, look, I think I'm better than Chito Vera. He won on that night, but I think he thinks that this is just the 1 out of 10 times that he lost to, whereas the 9 out of 10 times he would have beat Chito Vera. I do understand where he's coming from.
And not even that, but he also put up a photo of him with some chick's ass in the photo, and he goes, humbled.
Yeah.
He's him just smoking a doobie. Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully he comes back. Hopefully he gets some of his hype back. I just don't expect it to come easy. I believe Sean O'Malley will win by decision or a knockout, but I just don't say easy. But one thing that Sean O'Malley said he's worked on a lot is his ground game, because he's been competing in jiu-jitsu competitions.
Yes, he has. So he's been staying active even though he was injured and wasn't able to compete.
Obviously, he's trying to expand his skill set.
I think
he also got a lot of streamers on Twitch.
Yes. Definitely. I think Sean is someone that also takes energy from the crowd. And it'll be interesting to see that there's no crowd there. Yeah. I think Sean will win by KO. I think Thomas Almeida, there's a lot riding on this. He's lost to Jimmy Rivera, Rob Font, and Cody Garbrandt. And those are some really tough people to beat, right? And he's unfortunately lost to them, right? Does not take away from Almeida's very good kickboxing ability. But I think if you're fighting for your job, right, it can either make two things happen. Either one, you're really timid and you play it really safe and you're scared to get in a fist fight because if you get knocked out, you're done. Or it makes you really overzealous, really over-aggressive to knock them out and to beat them handily so that they don't have to worry about the judges screwing you over the decision, then you get kicked out of the UFC. But either way, that kind of pressure does not sit well with me. I think if you're really timid, that's something that Sean O'Malley can pressure you with. And then if you're really overzealous, you can walk into shots.
Yeah.
Because we know Sean O'Malley's got a really good countering ability.
Yeah.
The only issue I could see maybe is that O'Malley gets taken down and put it on his back. Now we know he's got proficiency on the ground. However, F. Almeida is able just to stay in full guard and just rain down punches. It could be beneficial for him as a strategy. Not too sure.
Okay.
So now that we get out of our usual MMA stuff out of the way, let's talk about the Snyder Cup.
Yes.
Damn.
Yes. It finally came, and boy, did it deliver.
4 hours.
Four fucking hours.
It was very good.
It was very brilliant.
He's a good storyteller, and especially, I think Zack Snyder, in a lot of his films, visually, he has everything worked out, and then simply everything has worked out the way his mind has constructed it to be so.
The fans fought for it. They petitioned for it. They argued for it. The power of the fans, the power of the internet prevails, man. Just Zack Snyder took a flack of shit for a while. Like, so much crap.
Now Joss Whedon's going to take a lot.
Yeah, Joss Whedon's going to take a lot. Warner Bros. Is going to take a lot. I've seen remember that meme I showed you from The Social Network where it's Andrew Garfield's character saying, I'm not just coming back for 30%. I'm coming back for everything.
Yeah.
And not even that, but there's like, because it was six parts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like part seven, Restore the Snyderverse, or what's the other one? Then it's like Aquaman. He's pointing at the Flash, and Aquaman is, what is it? Zack Snyder fans and Warner Bros. Is going, I am so sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because...
It was just unfortunate. I think Zack Snyder's daughter actually died. It was a...
Really?
I think that's what happened. I think... I will fact check this, but I believe the reason why that they were raising money for suicide prevention was because that was related to the tragedy. So I think Zack Snyder's daughter actually died and that caused him to pull out naturally, right? It's not his fault and it's no one's fault, right? Whose fault it is Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon fucked that movie up hard.
Yeah, he butchered it. Absolutely butchered it. Like, there were so many big differences that between the Zack Snyder version and the Justice League version. So let's talk about it. First of all, they got rid of that cheesy dialogue. Some of the one-liners in the Josh Whedon's Justice League was just, it wasn't even funny. It wasn't just, it was just awkward at times. Secondly, they used Cyborg and Flash so fucking well. Cyborg and Flash really, really got
Cyborg
to show.
Cyborg tied the movie really well together and his relationship with his father. Yeah. Now, in the first Justice League, it was kind of implied that he did not like his father, right? But we never got to see that kind of relationship. Cyborg's relationship with his father and with his mother, unfortunately, kind of tied the movie together really well. Cyborg actually, he was kind of the core of the movie. Instead of Batman or maybe Superman being the core of the movie, tying the team together, I believe it was Cyborg. Cyborg tied it. And I did check then. Yeah, Zack Snyder's daughter actually died from suicide. Yeah, she was 20 years old. So that's why they were trying to raise a lot of awareness. And at the start of the movie, it said for Autumn.
Yeah,
which
that's
was,
right.
Autumn
yeah.
was Zack Snyder's daughter that unfortunately died. Rest in peace to her. That's not really,
even that,
really unfortunate.
His wife was the producer.
Yeah, yeah. It was really interesting how their family produced this movie, and it was, I believe it was incredible. And now some people had their gripes and groans and things like that, and you'll never... What was interesting was I looked up, after watching it, I was like, I bet everyone would loved it. Yeah. So many news outlets were saying, and so many critics were saying, it's a longer Justice League, but not better. Everyone said how shit the new Justice League was, the Snyder Cut. And I was like...
Well, they can get a suck a fat one then.
I thought it was brilliant. Now, the pacing with the first maybe hour and a half was a bit funny.
Okay, yeah.
The pacing was a bit funny, but they needed to... There were so many work... When you have so many working characters that haven't had their own standalone films yet, you have to... give them a little bit more of a backstory rather than just imply their origin or imply their backstory. When you're able to show that and weave that through together, I loved how that they showed the Flash's relationship with his dad. There was so many working relationships together that you had to have a setup. You had to have a setup with Cyborg's relationship. You had to also talk about what happened with Trevor. What was his name? Steve Trevor?
Yeah, Steve Trevor, yeah.
With Wonder Woman, how she lost that person. Had to talk about Batman and his kind of like newfound personality motivation as well. Then as guilt, you know, to see his guilt as a powerful motivator. And then we got to see the weave through... I with Steppenwolf's relationship with Darkseid, how
that was impressive.
I thought it was really amazing that they also brought in, they actually dropped the word anti-life equation.
It was
amazing how they were able to use so many different Easter eggs and mold it together. Yeah. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was a really well done job.
Not even that, but they brought in Darkseid as well, and Darkseid doesn't really do much, but already you fear him as well because you see parts of him.
I think the best thing about Zack Snyder's Justice League is not just the way he tells a story. It's visually and hearing-wise. The voices need to be really well-suited. Like the Darkseid's voice, deep and otherworldly and dark. Yeah, then you've got and then
like a drone voice.
Yeah, and then you've got Steppenwolf's, which is much better than the originals.
Yeah.
And it's... again, otherworldly, and it's there's. I actually want to watch the movie again, and because it was 4 hours, I wonder why they don't make more 4-hour movies. Now I know
that's a lot of work. No.
It is a lot of work, and it will probably take more time. They've got a higher budget, right?
Yeah.
But arguably, when you have a movie, oh my ears just popped. Arguably, when you have a movie like that, or most movies in general, even the Marvel Cinematic Universe with Endgame.
Yeah.
The amount of scenes they've probably cut from Endgame, even though that was a long movie, they've probably cut a serious amount of scenes, right? To have I believe it was 3 hours and 52 minutes, right? They've used a lot of footage really well.
Yes.
And they arguably could have made maybe 3 hours and 30 minutes. But like, are you really going to gripe over 20 extra minutes? No. We would more be upset if it's a 4-hour movie and really could have been 2.
Yeah.
That's what would be silly if the pacing's all weird.
Yeah.
But
there was a lot of stuff that was included in the trailer for the first Justice League movie that didn't make it into the Josh Whedon cut. And everyone was like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. Like, I loved that scene when Cyborg's like playing football.
Yes, visually very good.
And then they visually go through Cyborg losing his body to Cyborg, you know, losing his mother to Cyborg, gaining control of his powers to understanding his powers. That was just so smooth by the way it went along. And my other favorite part that just blended so well was that moment when fucking Flash went back in time. Like, visually, it was so stunning because the biggest criticism I had about Justice League was Josh Whedon. When they're fighting inside that power plant, Russian area, you know, where there's all this sickly, comically, like, orange and red and yellow going on around each other. And then there was a little bit of humor when that part, when Superman, she carries a whole building and Flash saves that family. It felt like it was just... pointless. It was
pointless because this family, we don't know them, we have there's no relationship, there's nothing to it, right? You've used a lot of time to spend on this family that gets saved for 5 minutes and that's done. It was wasted. I felt like Snyder Cut, although it was longer, had the fat trimmed and just showed a nice moving plot that moved really well, and they were able, the relationships between each other worked really well.
That scene where he goes back in time was like, that was like Flashpoint, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was.
And he just talks to himself, okay, Barry, you got to go quicker than the speed of light. You got to go now.
I like that. I like to see, I think they did Barry Allen justice because they were able to show him having an awkward personality, right? But then actually be a hero. Rather than just saving people, he actually saved the Justice League. Yeah. And he was able, I like to see when he was upset and he was stressed and he went, you got to break your rule, Barry. You got to break your rule. I thought that was such a cool scene.
Yeah.
The
music that went behind it as well.
It's just visually and sound wise as well. The audio wise, really. I honestly want to watch it again.
Yeah.
And that's what's good about it. Maybe Endgame, I might not want to watch again because I feel like I've watched it and it's done. The Justice League movie, I felt, had so much information, so many just little Easter eggs that I'd love to watch it. I found myself watching the last 5 minute ones on YouTube because I loved seeing the alternate reality where he's talking to Joker.
Yeah.
And Joker says, as long as you've got this card.
Yes.
Then
that scene was really, really well done.
Which is funny because in the in that other scene, they show the Joker card and it's torn in half.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Talking about Harley Quinn, and they talked about Robin.
That's right. So they set it up in a world. Well, that was one of the biggest things that they had to solve, was because in Batman versus Superman, Batman looks at Robin's old suit and it's ha ha ha, you let your family die, and because Joker killed Jason Todd, and then he becomes back as Red Hood. And then in Batman vs Superman, Batman goes, oh, come on, Alfred, how many good guys are left in Gotham?
That it's not Jason Todd, it's actually Dick Grayson.
Really?
It's actually Dick Grayson. Zack Snyder made it clear it's actually not Jason Todd.
Really?
It's Dick Grayson.
Okay, well, that makes sense then.
So he's not just killed. Essentially, Dick Grayson becomes Nightwing.
Yeah.
But before he becomes Nightwing, he's actually killed. So they've actually done it in a different way.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
That's a smarter way. Well, that's an interesting way of doing it. But just that stuff was just hinted. It wasn't really actually talked about. And then you have the Joker and Batman actually engaging in some dialogue with each other. It was so well done. I feel like Jared kind of just revived his character a little bit because he was so pissed off that so much Joker footage was cut from Suicide Squad.
It definitely redeemed his character. Yeah. I don't think he was a bad Joker, right? Yeah. I just felt you can't really make a good judgment on him because so much stuff was cut out of Suicide Squad and things like that. Now, what was interesting and a little bit sad was it's taking a little bit of an injustice theme molded with Darkseid because the injustice line is that when actually Joker sets up Superman actually to kill Lois.
Yeah.
He actually kills Lois, and Lois was actually pregnant with child, which is what we saw in the, we actually zoomed in and panned in that she had a pregnancy test, so she's obviously pregnant with Superman's child. And it looks like that's going to be set up now. When you look at the last final bits, it shows Darkseid is walking behind and actually in the Batcave because you can see Robin's suit is in the background.
Yeah.
So Joker is essentially set up, I believe, that Lois dies in the Batcave so that Batman and Superman, you know, they're pitted to be against each other under Darkseid's rule. And it looks like unfortunately, it's really sad, but it looks like Superman's actually holding dead Lois. Lois has actually died in an explosion or fire or something like that. Because it doesn't really quite resemble a body anymore.
Mm-hmm. But not even that. But then
it's so dark. It's bad when it's dark.
He sends Barry back in time though, and they touched on that because in Batman vs Superman, Flash goes back in time, and to warn Batman, saying Lewis is the key to everything, and they talk about it. I was like, finally, they actually mentioned it up and all that. And then they had the nightmare scene, and then Batman wakes up, and then, you know, he has that other dream, and then Martian Manhunter showed up. So they used him. They just teased him, which I thought was fine. And now he's, again, expand the league. Maybe, I don't know, if we get Justice League 2, then Darkseid sort of comes to Earth, and then preparing for it. That it's just...
They do have to have the issue with Deathstroke now because they there's so much information, right? Because they also said his name is Bruce Wayne and then you've got Deathstroke.
Because they didn't do that in the first one.
Yeah, because then you've got Deathstroke. Although we see Deathstroke's possibly going to be a villain in the future. However, he wasn't so much a villain in the. He was part of the new Justice League that was in that nightmare scene. In the future, and he. The interesting was thing that was, well, the thing I found interesting was that Joker said, "How many alternate realities are you going to, you know, create and things like that?" Essentially, the Flash is heading back in time, trying to talk to Bruce. Bruce is understands it's, he just doesn't take much account of this. It doesn't seem to work, and now in this alternate reality. Batman actually has to do something other than send Flash into the past. Mm-hmm. He has to do something to actually fight Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously we saw Darkseid killed Aquaman. We saw his Omega Beams.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think Darkseid will be a very interesting villain, and I like him a lot. He makes Thanos look like a good guy.
Yeah, he's...
Ooh. He's just the embodiment of evil and anti-life.
He just looks more vicious, and I hope they explore his character just a little bit more, just, you know, in the next one, if there is one. But come on, man. Like, Warner Bros., own up to your mistake. Let Zack Snyder take more control. Let him do his justice, you know. He's deserved it. He's won back the fans. Like, because I said to you, this is the second highest DC-rated movie. First place was... The Dark Knight, second place, is now Snyder Cut, and the critics love it. The fans love it. It's just it's what we wanted. Anyway, finish us off. Not even that, but on the Thursday, it was the Snyder Cut. Friday was Falcon and Winter Soldier. So we had two great pieces of content, superhero content, back to back. Falcon versus Winter Soldier, great, great pilot episode.
Good start, to be honest.
Great start.
I think they did what WandaVision didn't do. WandaVision didn't have an amazing pilot and then gets everyone interested, right? Yeah. I think they spent a good bit of money, especially on that flying scene as well.
Yeah.
And they opened well.
Yeah.
It seems that they're... It's interesting we get to see the background on Sam Wilson's story with his family. He was gone for 5 years. Sam's sister... has had to raise two kids while during the blip, and now Sam comes back. Now he wants to help his sister out, but obviously she goes, I don't need your help, you know. Yeah. And that is, it's funny because it's a struggling time right now. Interesting to see what a post-blip life is like.
Yeah.
You know, the banks.
I was happy to see George St. Pierre come back.
That was really good. I loved it. And he's going to be reoccurring on it as well, which would be really good.
Oh, he just came out of nowhere. He just like, one of the guys, did you see that? And he goes, what? Yeah, he just pops his head out.
Exactly.
Oh, for those
I feel like his acting ability is even higher. I love when I saw GSP, I just went, because my girlfriend was next to me, and I just went, it's GSP, it's GSP. It was insane. I already knew he was going to be in the show, but then when I saw him, I was like, holy shit, the first episode. I didn't know
it was going to come up that quickly.
I didn't think it was going to be that quickly. Now, what's interesting is we're going to see Zemo later on and how that all ties into these mask characters. But... the main thing for me was that we get to see Bucky's kind of guilt.
We get to
see his guilt. Neither him or Sam takes the shield up, and now we see a new Captain America, which is kind of, this is not what Captain America wanted. It's against his wishes. And then you've got so many moving plots because Bucky has so much guilt, and he's crossing off names off the list, seeing a therapist and things like that, who's an ex-soldier herself. And... He's struggling with the guilt of killing
innocent
people under Hydra's brainwashing and influence, and now he doesn't know whether or not to tell the person he's now become friends with and has dinner with. You know, it's a very funny dynamic, and he's also similar to Captain America. What popped into my head just then is that. Bucky and Steve are two people that are very old. They're both...
Yeah.
They don't feel quite right in the modern time. Yeah. They're out of place.
Yeah.
And Steve was out of place, but he went back in time and he was able to be back in his rightful time and be with his love, right? The issue with Bucky is he's filled with tons of guilt.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any person that was in his time anymore. and he's in the present.
Yeah.
And he's a man. He's essentially with Steve back in his proper place in his proper time. No, it's obviously a weird timeline, but Bucky's out of place.
Yeah.
He's got to deal with all so much guilt.
Yeah, not even that, but like he had that dinner with the waitress and she goes, "How old are you?" And he goes, 104.
Yeah.
And you think he acts like he's being serious and she just laughs it off. I think they've just done Bucky like really, really well. I mean, but one thing that's interesting was I was asking about this new Captain America. So I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? The costume was off. He didn't even have the star as well. He had like red lines across his chest. Mm. And I asked my friend about it. He's an American comic book fan. He said that, well, in the comics, what happens is Falcon sort of rejects the mantle like he does in this TV series. And they have this guy and who comes up and I can't remember his name, but he like...
I believe he's just a soldier, to be honest.
Yeah, but he glorifies the idea of being Captain America and takes advantage of it. And it forces Falcon to take up the mantle.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. I feel like that's going to be happening because it's going to be Falcon struggling to come to terms that he has all this responsibility that he can take up, but he doesn't believe he's kind of worthy of it, and he wants his own like superhero name as the Falcon. He doesn't want to be known as Captain America. He felt like Captain America was Steve's title. So I got a feeling at the end of this series we're going to see a Bucky.
I think he wanted to be his own identity.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought it was interesting because I expected Bucky to become the new Captain America, mm-hmm. but then Sam was offered the title. And I thought it was strange because Bucky's the one that is a bit closer to Steve, to be honest.
And he does become it in the comics.
But I think this would be a perfect way for Bucky to redeem himself, is to put good back into the world by taking up Captain America's mantle and doing that just like his friend would. I think that would be the best way to do it. And obviously they might flesh that out. But the most interesting thing to me is Bucky trying to live a normal civilian life,
mm-hmm.
but dealing with numerous amount of debt where he's got a book full of names that he's crossing off.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way, in a good way he wants to redeem himself.
But I think that's when Baron Zemo comes in because Baron Zemo was the one who managed to brainwash him again. You know, I think he can't be brainwashed anymore, so they might have redone that when he was in Wakanda. So I've got a feeling when... it's going to tie in really nicely now. However, I also had this theory that apparently I think there was more Winter Soldiers.
Yeah.
You know, the serum that was given, even though they were killed in Civil War, I think there was more. Because the way that there was a scene when that soldier tries to hunt down the Purple Hand or something like that.
I don't actually know. They're just, I guess, terrorists.
Yeah, and they kind of had that guy, he had that super strength and he nearly not killed him and all that because he was able to swim around. Maybe that was that super soldier serum. Maybe this is what it's about because they're trying to... Someone's got a hold of that serum and it's giving it out.
Who knows?
Perhaps, or they could just be metahumans.
It could be.
Sorry, not metahumans is a DC term.
DC term.
They could be fleshing out maybe the mutants.
Yeah.
These could be maybe post-blip. They've got mutant abilities.
Yeah.
Or they could flesh out the super soldier thing.
Yeah.
And that's essentially a good move as well because they're able to show that super soldier serum does not... And they could even do that with a new soldier. The new soldier might be... They might try and recreate a secret serum or something like that.
Or maybe it might be Hydra.
And it goes to show that superpowers or not, it doesn't really make you a superhero.
Yeah.
It's the character, which is what made Steve Rogers... Captain America, was his character, it was his selflessness and his courage.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you coupled him with the power to act, then he was able to be Captain America. It's an interesting way, and it probably will set up either Sam Wilson or Bucky to actually take up the mantle. But I'm really happy about Marvel's TV shows. They're very high quality.
Yeah.
WandaVision redeemed itself later in the end.
In the end.
Probably those last two episodes were what redeemed it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But this one I'm more happy about. Yeah. Falcon vs. Winter Soldier, I'm more excited for than WandaVision. I think we've said that in the past.
Yeah, it starts more stronger.
It has started off stronger. It started off different, to be honest.
Anyway.
All right, brilliant, guys. So we've just we've done a part one, a part two of our podcast. So it's probably about a two-hour podcast, to be honest, altogether. I hope you guys really enjoyed that. Now, we've got our Instagram at The Last Set Podcast that you should definitely be following. We post, if you're an MMA fan or a comic book fan or anything like that, we're always posting tons of new content that you'll love, you'll really, really enjoy. Sometimes even audio clips that aren't going to be on our YouTube channel are actually on our Instagram that you'll really like. And then we've got our already on Apple Podcasts. If you're listening right now, head over to our YouTube channel, make sure you subscribe. But if you're watching us, which is probably the main amount of our viewers, main percentage of our viewers, you should actually head over to Apple Podcasts, subscribe there, or jump on Spotify and follow us there. You're going to automatically download the podcast, be notified when you get a new podcast. You can listen to it when you work out, when you're at home, when you're in the car. And we're going to break down fights, and we're going to also preview fights that are going to happen the following week. So if you're interested in betting and you want to take a little bit of a leap of faith on us and our thoughts on fights, then you definitely can. And we recommend that you listen and watch our videos. So appreciate it very much. Appreciate the support. If you haven't already, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Follow us on Instagram. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Just search The Last Set Podcast, and you'll find amazing content that you won't find on our other social media. Each social media is unique and different. So appreciate it very much. Anything else to say?
That's all to say, man.
All right. Appreciate it very much. Bye, guys.
Okay, thank you, guys. All the best. Bye-bye.